Welcome to Solutions OP Clinical Trials Podcast. My name is Olga and I'm the Managing Director of Solutions OP. We are a small team of experienced professionals working on clinical trials in the United Kingdom. I'll use our podcast to discuss hot topics in clinical trials and provide analysis of the latest trends and challenges in pharma and medical device industries, not just in the UK, but globally. Thank you for listening. Welcome to the latest episode of the podcast. Today, the topic is, I hope, very interesting for for many people. It's about the data quality of the training data used by artificial intelligence in the medicine. And more specifically, I plan to discuss the metric framework, which was developed by German scientists. But if you stay with me, you'll learn a bit more about it. So the first thing, why is this very interesting and very exciting topic, is because there's a lot of enthusiasm at the moment to use artificial intelligence in medicine. And it's not simply chatbots, really, but it's more about physicians being able to use artificial intelligence to use it for diagnostic purposes and improve treatment for their patients and so on. So there is a really big interest at the moment in this area. And we have challenges with artificial intelligence, as you're probably all aware of it. So that's why I decided to discuss this topic and discuss this specific framework which the scientists have developed, and give a bit of a practical point of view of data quality when we're talking about data generated for training the artificial intelligence algorithms. But let's start from the very beginning and talk a little bit about the biggest challenges at the moment that artificial intelligence faces. I think everyone will agree that the lack of confidence in the society in artificial intelligence is basically because of the misuse of artificial intelligence. This could be everything from deep fakes to a lot of misinformation, fake photos and things like that. Of course, another big issue that we're currently having is the lack of trust in its accuracy. And for those of you who follow the field, you'll probably remember a couple of years ago, there were cases where artificial intelligence was recommending and encouraging suicide. And it was, you know, quite a disturbing case. Another reason for the mistrust in artificial intelligence is, I think, the lack of understanding how it works. For the average person who is not a programmer, you know, it's not something that they can understand. It's something big. You know, they don't really get how that works. And I think many scientists even cannot clearly say how things work. So I think that's another big challenge for artificial intelligence, the lack of understanding from people and even from scientists on how that works. And of course, when you have that, it comes the next challenge, which is overregulation. So basically, when you don't quite understand how something works, you tend to create more regulations to prevent any issues that could possibly happen. And all this is because of data quality. Basically, the artificial intelligence algorithms, they use data to train the model so that they can produce, you know, adequate data. So it all down to data quality. Many of these issues could be tackled with improving the data and the data quality. But let's think about for a moment, can artificial intelligence be trusted to be used in medicine? And it's very interesting. I read an article recently on this topic, and it turns out that many physicians use artificial intelligence in their daily practice to make medical decisions. And of course, considering the challenges, probably it sounds strange, but you can't really blame them because it's so easy and so simple just to type something in your Google search and it produces artificial intelligence summary of the information that you're looking for. So it's so much easier the way it's designed for people to use it. But again, the question is, can we 100% trust this? I think we can make it work in the future, but in order to make it work and have more trustworthy artificial intelligence models, we definitely need to have a better data quality, the data that is used to train the models. And this is, I think, another area where there's a huge interest. I came across this a very interesting publication from a German scientist who have developed a metric framework, and the aim of this metric framework is to provide guidance to developers who are working with artificial intelligence, and that's specifically for data quality for the use in medicine. It's very interesting review. If you're working in that field, I strongly recommend you have a look into it. So they have studied 120 studies which meet their criteria, and based on these studies, they've created a very good framework and basic principles what you need to look into when you want to have to use data to train artificial intelligence. So it's really, to me, it's really useful thing that they've done this analysis. But let's go to the actual framework and what exactly they have done. So they have separated different features of the data into five different categories. So the first category is about the measurement process. So here they include in this category device errors. For example, if what you measure is measured accurate and precise, what you're looking for. So for example, if I have blood sample which is analyzed with the same method in the same lab, I would expect to have same results, right? But in reality, we have different results. So you can use the same lab sample, the same lab, and the same method, and you can still have that deviation. So you can have slightly different results, even though there might not be necessarily huge difference between them. They could be slightly different. Then in that category, first category also comes human error. And here we're talking about, for example, data entry error. Someone forgot to enter something, just miss it, not intentionally. Or sometimes you have different people measuring, for example, we have different radiologists measuring the same tumor. So they might have slightly different measurements. And I think those of you who work in clinical trials, we see that a lot. We have central reader and we have the site reader, and they read the same tumor and they can get different measurements and even different overall assessment of the disease. So that's the human human error. Let's say it's not really error, but it's more like the different way that people are doing the measurements. So then we talk about completeness of the data. Of course, completeness is important. You have to think about that. You have different people working in healthcare, and everyone documents the things in different details. So someone might write really detailed summary, and someone could be quite schematic, just one or two sentences. Another part of this first category of measurement process is the source credibility. So in this particular case, they're talking about if the diagnosis is made by, let's say, experienced physician, or if you have someone who is a trainee, and not just that, but sometimes it's down to personality as well, because different physicians might have a different approach to diagnostics simply based on the fact if they're more inclined to take risks, or do they want to be really 100% sure about something before making the final diagnosis. So this also affects the quality of the data. Another important thing that they mention in this category is the traceability. For example, do you have access to the raw data? So if I have a patient in the hospital who is seen in another local hospital somewhere else, do we actually have the actual results from the other hospital, or do we have some narrative which was sent to us? So that could also affect the quality of the training data that you use for artificial intelligence. And the other last aspect of this category is the data poisoning. So you can have someone deliberately falsifying data. I know it sounds strange, but it is possible that you can have such cases where someone's deliberately changing data. Then in their next category, the second category is about the timelessness of the data. And here they're discussing that, for example, if you have a 20-year-old data set for patients with cholesterol, you cannot really use that data to predict cardiovascular risks just because it's only for 20 years. So you need a lot bigger data set for a lot more longer time frame to be able to use that data to adequately predict the cardiovascular risk. In that second category of timelessness, you have another important part, and if the data is current. So as you know, it's not only if the data is up to date, but we need to take into consideration that sometimes there's new data available. So we have a patient who is diagnosed with something, but then new data becomes available, and that might actually change the initial diagnosis of the patient. So all that needs to be taken into consideration. The next big category is category three, that's the representativeness of the data. And here we have to consider some aspects. For example, variety. If the data that we have is really representative of all the patients, so for example, if I have data for patients above age of 60, and I'm looking to use that data to do diagnostics, I might use it for patients who are below 60, and my data might not necessarily be adequate to be able to be used for those who are below age of 60. And another important part of the representativeness is what sources you have used for the data. So if you use only one source for the data, that might not be enough. So you need to have various sources which will give a better representation. So that's why it's important that we can't just use one source from one hospital and based on this to build a model that will diagnose a disease. It's just not really possible. Another part in the representativeness category is the depth of the data. It's very important to have really good quality data. So, for example, if I have a CT scan, the question I'll need to ask, which I'll be using for diagnostic, the question I'll need to ask is, will that data that I have with these CT scans be enough for me to identify small tumours, for example? Another question that we can ask is that data representative of the patient population that I'll be using for the diagnostic purposes? So that is what is included in the depth of the data. And of course, we need to know if we have enough details to be able to have the complete picture of what we need to do with this data for analysis and diagnostics. And in this category, also in this third category, also falls the target class balance. So this means that you need to have data which is relevant for the specific patient population. So if you have a rare disease, for example, and you want to be using this data to create a diagnostic method for rare diseases, you can't just have one patient with rare disease and use that data. You need to have representation and you need to have more data for these patients with rare diseases to be able to create something which will help in this case. So the next big category is category four, informativeness. So in this category, we have several aspects, things that we need to consider. So understandability of the data. This is, for example, is the diagnosis clearly documented in the medical records? Because sometimes it's not. And those of you who work in clinical research, you've seen that a lot, that sometimes it's not quite clear what the diagnosis is, the final diagnosis is. And this is normal because very often they need to have additional assessments, additional procedures to be able to come up to the final diagnosis. So that's important to know if the final diagnosis is documented clearly, for example. Another thing in the category of informativeness is redundancy. So, for example, do you have duplicated data? And that's very often a problem. We have duplication of data. It's common. Another important part is sometimes if the missing data, so for example, the physician has not requested the patient to have cholesterol, but we don't know, just because it's missing, we don't know, is it because this is not necessary and that's why the physician didn't request it, or is it because he just forgot about it? Forgot to request this one. So it's very important to know to what extent the data is missing and if there's any explanation why this data is missing. For example, not relevant. You might have a comment to say that this is not relevant and not applicable. Another important part in this fourth category of informativeness is the feature importance. So some of the information that you have might not necessarily be new. So that's something that you need to take also into consideration. So you might have some medical history data, you might have some new data, you might have changes in diagnosis. So you might have some missing data because someone didn't document it, didn't think it's important. Or sometimes you have something which is clearly documented as not done because it's not needed. So all that falls into the category of the informativeness of your data. And the very last category is consistency. So even though it's the very last fifth category, it's actually a quite important one. And the reason for this is because we document data in a different way. There are standards, of course, but more or less each hospital has and each physician probably has their own way of documenting things. So, for example, someone might write mail and someone can just put M, the letter M. So in this case, the data is coded, could be coded differently because it's documented in the initial source differently. Another thing is, what is the for example, do you have adequate information for the particular patient patient population? And in this case, what is meant is you have some diseases which they change. The same way that many things evolve, the diseases evolve. Diseases which was common in elderly patients may now may be able to be seen in younger patients and even in teenagers. So it is important to have all that history for all these patient groups and to have that information. So you don't just limit yourself to elderly patients because you expect that they will have the disease, but you really need to consider that the disease outlook might have changed and you might have a lot younger patients included as well. So this is another thing that you really need to think about and consider when you're collecting your data. So what I can say at the end is I think it's very important that companies develop their own checklists. And in purely practical point of view, if you need to collect data, if you're a developer and you need to collect data, you have to really assess and discuss this with the physicians that you're working with and make sure that you understand the quality of their data and you assess the quality of their data according to what you expect to have. And not just pick the some big hospitals because you've worked with them in the past or because you think they'll be the best ones for the data. I think it's really important when you're collecting such data that you assess the data before you decide to use that data for your model. And it's in a similar way that we do assessments in clinical trials. So when we have clinical trials, we go there and we assess if the hospital has the resources, the equipment, and experienced staff. And it's the same with data quality. You really need to go there and find out if the data and the quality of the data is something that is satisfactory and something that you can use really to create a good model. Because at the end of the day, if your data that you use for training your artificial intelligence is not good quality, you can't expect to have a really a good model, an artificial intelligence algorithm that will help you with diagnostic or whatever medical purposes you want to use it. So I'm really hoping that people will take these considerations and make a proper assessment, that will definitely help if you're looking to develop a high quality product which could be used in medicine. And I think it's possible. Thank you so much for your time and for your attention.